meeting to order. Are there any citizen comments? All right, seeing none, then we will move on. The only announcement that I think I would make is just to recognize that our two youth and government representatives this concludes their service as members of the board, and we certainly appreciate your input and hope that you've learned something here. We've certainly learned something from you as well. Member Michelli is going to University of Wisconsin, Madison, and her partner, Mr. Carswell, is going to Washington University, according to a little squib I read in the newspaper.
Washington University?
In St. Louis.
Oh.
So,
to play tennis,
we wish you the best.
Thank you.
Are there any committee member reports? Seeing none, you have the minutes of April 11th, and what is your pleasure?
Move to approve.
Second.
Discussion or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? We have adopted. The next item is a proposed resolution to approve the appointment of Dustin Harp to serve on the Housing Authority Board. Mark Molinaro is not here this evening. He had to attend, I believe it was his daughter's confirmation, and so he could not be here, but he did want to share some thoughts on this appointment with the committee before we acted. So I suggest, just as a deference and courtesy to a member of the committee, that we put this off to the next meeting.
I don't know why we have to do that.
Well, Mr. Harp isn't here. We don't have to do that.
No, but I mean, what's the point? I mean, because Mark isn't here and he's got something to say, we can't approve the appointment. I move to approve.
Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Discussion?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Is there some particular
that we don't know
piece of information or communication that Mr. Molinaro wanted to bring to the board that he wasn't able to bring this evening? Is there?
There is. I mean, he's discussed it with me. I don't know Mr. Harp at all, and I don't want to speak to the issue except to say that Mark did have objections, and he thought that there some of the facts that he had or opinions that he had based upon his professional work with Mr. Harp should be shared with the committee. And my feeling is, just in deference to a committee member, we ought to let him speak to the issue. I'm not saying I support the appointment or oppose it, but I was just communicating that, at least in my view, we ought to give him an opportunity to share that with the committee, and he had good reason not to be here.
So do you feel the reason he gave you was
a legitimate one?
So you mean for not being here? Or
for
the committee? I think it's something the committee ought to hear.
Okay, then I'll withdraw my motion.
Further discussion?
Yes.
When would this appointment be effective?
Well, as soon as it went to the board, I mean, if we passed it or didn't, the next meeting, it would go to the board the following meeting.
At
so our next meeting is June 16th?
I believe so.
Yeah. So it would go to the third Tuesday of June. Second Tuesday. Yeah, third Tuesday.
You need
of June.
A motion.
I mean, that would be my plan, so.
Yeah.
You need a motion to
June 20th, County Board, June 16th, Finance Committee.
I withdraw my motion to.
All right.
I'll make motion to defer this matter until our next regular meeting of the Finance Committee.
Second.
All right. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next item on the agenda is the Cabo Report. Todd Battle.
Good evening. Chairman and committee members, you should have in front of you a copy of our report. I'll just do a quick kind of overview or summary of the various items in here, and then I'll answer any questions. The first page, really kind of after the cover page, is just kind of a summary of the quarter's worth of activities covering the period January 1 to March 31. Typically, we provide kind of an overview of economic development activity. Just to note a few things, we have been traditionally bringing to you our synchronous reports, which is a tracking system we use based on the visits we make area companies to kind of gauge their economic activity, expansions, growth, any kind of red flag issues in terms of the business climate. We continue to do that. I would just say we had some staff turnover late last year that really kind of was a key person that was leading this program. So our visits in terms of the number we want to conduct are off significantly. We've just made an offer to someone that will start with our organization in July. So I would anticipate that this will ramp right back up as soon as that person's on board. So we continue to do some of these visits, but in a much more limited fashion, so the data isn't as robust as it had been. I'll just drop to the next point, just some key economic developments in the quarter, just some highlights. A company, EMCO Chemical Distributors, has moved forward with moving their corporate headquarters into Lakeview Corporate Park in Pleasant Prairie. About 3 years ago, they purchased what was the Lauder / Eastman Chemical / Hexion Specialty Chemicals building. It's a really good site with a lot of amenities and a really good environment for them. They've decided to move their corporate headquarters there, so they will have some production operations, some distribution operations at their corporate headquarters in that facility. Will involve relocating about 125 people from a current operation in North Chicago. L&M Corrugated Container Corp. announced plans to purchase about a 99,000 square foot industrial facility in Lakeview Corporate Park. The facility was originally built for a company called CPI Plastics, and it had been operated for a short period by another company called Mid-America Bag. L&M would like to purchase the facility and move a corrugated container, corrugated box manufacturing company into the facility. That would involve about 45 positions or jobs being created at that site. We also, in January, there was an announcement that Tachen International, a Korean steel distribution firm, is working with CenterPoint Wispark, and they announced plans to build about a 471,000 square foot industrial facility in Lakeview Corporate Park. Once that facility is complete, Tachen would occupy the entire facility, and they anticipate to have about 63 employees at that site. And then lastly, late last year, it was announced that Meijer had acquired Super Value's Midwest region facilities, their distribution center and all the property there. As a result, Super Value was going to discontinue distribution operations in this market, but still had about 200 plus people associated with their regional headquarters office. It was announced probably in about February that they were going to move into a separate new facility in Lakeview Corporate Park. So they signed a long-term lease, and they'll occupy about a 43,000 square foot office building in Lakeview Corporate Park and move their Midwest region headquarters off the site. And that really kind of paves the way then for Meijer to move into the site, and they're planning about a 250,000 square foot addition to the existing building. So those are probably the four announcements in the last few months. There was another with subsequent event to this report. A Finnish company called Kona Cranes has also signed a long-term lease to occupy about a 45,000 square foot industrial facility in Pleasant Prairie. They make lifts and cranes and various components for those materials. This particular facility in Pleasant Prairie will actually, I think they're going to manufacture control panels that go into these lifts. And that project involves about another, I'd say about 40 to 43 employees, if I recall. So pretty good amount of activity. We continue to, these are the ones that are announced or fit for communication. We still, right now, are probably handling about another 4 to 5 really legitimate inquiries or prospects that are in some form of a request for proposal, either seeking real estate for a facility construction or looking for an existing facility to move an operation into. So activity's been fairly strong. Just highlight a little bit about the downtown plan. We completed that plan in the fourth quarter of 2012. A couple of priority recommendations. There were a number of them, but two that we felt were really needed to be moved on quickly was the establishment of a Main Street organization and the funding of a full-time executive director. Happy to report that we applied to the state of Wisconsin and received a Main Street designation, which will, I think it'll likely be effective July 1. It's been designated to us. There's some contractual agreements that we need to put in place with the state of Wisconsin, but I think July 1 effectively will be a Main Street community. We also teamed with various other funding sources to raise money to support a full-time executive director, and just announced in the last couple of weeks that we had hired Violet Ricker to lead that Main Street program. She had previously been the Main Street Director for Waukegan for about 3.5 years. I think she's going to do a really good job. She's planning to start with us in a permanent role at the Memorial Day week, I think the last weekend in May.
Mr. Battle?
Yeah.
If I could stop you just for a second there. I know you mentioned about EMCO bringing 125 jobs from North Chicago to here, so they're just relocating their employees here basically on that one. And then L&amp;M corrugated container, those 45 jobs, are they new jobs or transfer jobs on that?
They're moving, they have a facility in Zion.
So they're moving out there. And then Tai Chen, is that all new?
It's an expansion, they have some positions in Gurnee now, I don't know how many they employ at Gurnee right now, but they have a smaller facility in Gurnee, they're building a new facility in Pleasant Prairie.
And then Super Value, the same thing, or just shifting some of the jobs?
Super Value's more of a retention, they were here, they had employees in Pleasant Prairie, and there were, I guess what we...
I'm just glad that we're retaining, that's what I'm trying to get at, so, thank you for that.
I think that's probably it, and then there's just a list of a couple other, we have a couple of loan approvals outstanding that are not completed yet, so we just listed those at the bottom for your review. Then I'll just jump quickly into the, just the particular loan funds, just to give you a quick overview. The first fund we would report out is the U.S. Department of Commerce Economic Development Administration Loan Fund, and the first page associated with that is just a simple reconciliation. You see the bank account balance at the start of the year, loan and principal payments in, any fees or any disbursements or commitments, and then you see at the end it has a balance of about $1.3 million as of 3/31. And the page following that is just a list of approximately 8 or 9 loans in that loan fund and the principal outstanding balance, and just maybe the notable point there is all of our outstanding borrowers are current in terms of payments and everything. Then we report on the county revolving loan fund. It started the January 1 with a balance of about $360,000. See the various funds in and out, and then you see an outstanding commitment of about $416,000 that was referenced on the first page in terms of the commitment that hasn't yet closed. So the available cash balance would be just under $60,000. And then again, a listing of about 8 or 9 outstanding loans and the current balances and payment history. And again, all of those loans are current. And then the last loan fund would be the CKC loan fund. This is the Consolidated Kenosha County Revolving Loan Fund. These are community development block grant dollars. Started the year with about $2.4 million in the balance. You see the various commitments and income, and there's an outstanding commitment of about $450,000 there, so the available cash balance would be about $2.1 million. And then again, a listing of all the outstanding loans. This would be maybe the notable point on this particular loan fund. These funds have traditionally flowed to us through the state, and if anybody's been paying attention or reading lately, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, our state economic development agency, has recently been in the news for not the right reasons in terms of some audit findings about the way that they're handling revolving loan fund programs and federal funds. So the state is under incredible amount of scrutiny. It really has not yet had an impact on us. We administer these funds at a local level, have done so well, you know, regularly audit ourselves, and you know, have a pretty clean bill of health, but just notable that the state and their administration of these funds is called into question by the Department of Housing and Urban Development right now. Then there's the high impact fund. Just a quick, originally we capitalized that fund with $1 million. We've made a $250,000 disbursement related to a significant company expansion. And we've got one outstanding commitment of another $250,000. So there's about $500,000 of available cash balance in the fund. And there's just a simple report following that. That's it. I'd be happy to elaborate or answer any questions or
Bill?
Just in general, when you mentioned some of these newer entities coming into Kenosha County or entities that are expanding, I guess let's just restrict it to newer entities coming in. Do they have some basic affiliation with CAVA? Or is it just you're reporting entities coming into West Park in general? In terms of what you're reporting this evening, for example, if there were entities to come into, say, Kenosha Business Park, West Park, whatever, that did not have necessarily some financial need for, I would say, revolving loan fund, are we still going to get reports from that via you, or would that be under the radar at some point?
Good question. We definitely would report to you in terms of activity that we're seeing in the community. In these particular instances, we've had significant touches with these companies. We've either worked with them on site selection, or we've worked with their management to build a business case for why they ought to invest in Kenosha. Not all of them would necessarily end up being loan customers.
Okay.
In a lot of instances, I would just say this in terms of loan demand right now, interest rates are incredibly low. Commercial lending is coming back a bit. And so if companies are creditworthy and can get commercial lending, they can get it at pretty attractive prices. So our advantage of having these revolving loan funds has been we've traditionally been able to provide pretty low-cost capital. There's some instances right now where banks will lend money cheaper than we can. We have interest rates floors in some of these funds. We might not be able to lend it lower than 3% or lower than 4%, and banks are lending to some companies in the high twos.
For corporate.
So not all of these companies would necessarily be loan customers, but in some way, shape, or form, we've worked with them on a kind of a business case for making it.
Okay. On the other side of the coin, then, if you would have an entity that would leave one of the large business parks, close down, pack up, cease doing business, whatever the situation is, do we have that come through as a report from you? I mean, is that included in the whole business agenda that we have here?
It definitely would be, and we haven't had a lot of that recently, but I don't think it would be a big secret either if a major corporation decided to do a major layoff or downsize or close a facility. I think it'd be readily available, but it definitely could be something that we would.
Does it come across in report fashion? That's my question. And you can get back to some. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I would like for this committee to complete picture painted so that if we're accentuating the good side, we're reporting on the good side, new business coming in. If there are entities that are leaving or moving, or if you have vacancy rates, I think we should be apprised of that as well, even though it may not be strictly a CAVA.
Those reports do exist already. They are done through the Department of Workforce Development. And they would come to you through like the job center and DWD, because they would file like a mass layoff notice, like the WARN Act. Okay. So those reports are available. We could pull those and include them in future reports.
I would think so. I think that's appropriate for the chair. Do you see value in that as far as having the committee be apprised of the general business climate as opposed to just one particular side of it?
Yeah.
John Beekler frequently did that.
Thank you.
Okay.
So it certainly has precedent.
Do you work at all with Doug Bartz on that kind of stuff or no?
It would
come from him, right?
Yeah, they have it's a state law requirement. If you're going to lay off, they would call a mass layoff. There'd be a report filed, and it would actually, basically there'd be a public notice that that's going to happen. So those are all well recorded if it's sizable.
Yeah, so I think we're in a good position that we have traditionally more business coming in than we have leaving, but still it should be one of these reports where it's balanced, we present both sides of the equation, or at least apprised of it. Just two follow-up questions. For the Wisconsin Main Street, that's through the state of Wisconsin, Todd?
Right.
Is that some type of contractual agreement where a part of a Wisconsin Main Street program or agenda for a particular period of time? How does it work?
I think a Main Street designation, I think it, I think it's good for 5 years. We're new to the program, and we haven't gotten our official contract yet, which we would sign effective July 1, but I think it's a five-year designation.
That was my impression, too, that it ran approximately 5 years. What about contract for the director? What type of contract for the director do we have?
Contract? We don't have a contract. We have hired somebody that would be a, because right at this point, they'd be considered an at-will employee.
At-will employee. Those are my questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Aaron?
I have kind of a specialized question. The grocery store market, I know Meyer's kind of looking to come in, saw Festival Foods, bought Super Value. Just had a couple questions from friends and whatnot. Have we attracted anything like organic, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, just with the amount of grocery stores that we have? Have they inquired at all or anything like that, more of a specialized store? It's more of a curiosity question.
There may be. I would just, I guess, it wouldn't be something that would necessarily be on our radar screen.
Okay.
In terms of, like, our approach to economic development and traditionally has been, particularly with the funds that we manage, is a sharper focus on base employment, industrial development, manufacturing, filling the business parks, job creation, with the idea that if you take care of that aspect of the economy, economy's healthier, more people are working, more disposable income, living standards are higher, disposable income's higher, then your market is more attractive for retail development. Formal economic development programs very rarely would focus on retail development as a priority, with the exception of perhaps doing it in certain neighborhoods, like a downtown or like an uptown.
Sure.
So we don't do, admittedly, we do not do a lot of spade work on retail development. We are more focused on industrial development, commercial development, office jobs, manufacturing jobs, with the idea that if we do well in that, the market will kind of justify that new retailers and new development will come in to serve an expanding customer base. So there definitely have been a number of grocery stores enter the market pretty aggressively more recently. I'm not aware of, but I probably wouldn't be if there's like a Whole Foods or a Trader Joe's or those types. The only other comment I'd add to that is when we were doing the downtown study with the Lakota Group, we did a fair amount of market analysis about the market and the types of retailers that might fit in that instance, particularly in the downtown.
Sure.
And so we had a little bit of information about that. In their opinion, their professional opinion, their market study, the downtown market, anyhow, wasn't really ready to support like a Whole Foods or a Trader Joe's in terms of demand.
Okay.
All right. Further discussion? Commander? Yes.
How are we doing as far as compared to other cities, I mean, in the area or whatever? I mean, as far as how you could see it.
In terms of?
Well, bringing in jobs like, you know, like you've been doing, you've been doing a pretty good job at it.
Yeah. I would say we do some, we've started to do a little bit more benchmarking. We don't necessarily, the benchmark communities that we compare ourselves to are not necessarily other Wisconsin communities. We pick kind of a peer set of communities that we are starting to compare ourselves to. If you're looking about how are we doing in the area, I think just based on my interaction with my colleagues and my interaction with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and the state, it feels like Southeast Wisconsin is a fairly hot market right now in terms of economic development activity and industrial development activity. I think that's, some of that is, I think the state in terms of the perception of its business climate is, you know, has improved over the last several years. And I think maybe another factor is that the perception or the reality in terms of what's the state of Illinois' business climate is not improved. So there's been a kind of a pretty solid migration of firms out of Illinois, and because of our proximity to the Chicago metropolitan area, we have captured a fair amount of that development. So there's been some of that migration, but I also say, like in terms of like a company like a Meyer or some of the other projects that we're now working on, this is a pretty attractive market because of our geographic location, because of kind of recent development activity. I think it is on the radar screen of site selection and real estate developers and that type of thing. So I feel like we're doing pretty well. We're starting to build a little bit better benchmarking so that we can have the numbers to quantify that. But if I talk to peers around the state, I think they would be somewhat envious about the amount of activity and deal flow that we see happen in our community right now.
Thank you.
All right, further discussion? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So let's move on to number eight, the sheriff's resolution. Is that, that's you, Chuck?
Chairman, members of the committee, it's actually a letter.
Mm-hmm.
The repurposed funds of the finance committee and the points of judiciary law as a matter of protocol for that, but it needs approval by finance committee. And this has to do with a radio base station on Highway 45 and 50. And we're not quite sure, but we believe a lightning strike hit the tower out there and fried the station. This
what happened to it? What?
We believe a lightning strike.
Okay.
Fried it. We can't be 100% positive, but we think that's what happened. And unfortunately, that particular radio base station out there acts as a unit to transport and mobile data signals to the West End squads west of Highway 45. Without that, our squads in the West End, including the smaller villages who depend on our mobile data system, aren't getting the information that the East End squads are getting because they're not doing the transmission. This acts like a comparator and throws the signals out there and boosts them out. So we pulled that station out to have it evaluated and looked at, and it's beyond repair, and they recommended we purchase a new one. The unfortunate part is we didn't have the money budgeted for that because we didn't anticipate it frying us. And there's really no signal, there's no warning when these things go, they go. They can go, they can fail for other reasons without a warning. So we had some money put in our budget for 2013 to purchase a property rack storage system for the DCDC, which would help us sort out the prisoners' garments, which we had downtown. That's the only money we had left in the budget that we could be able to repurpose. The replacement and installation of this new Paragon system would be about $30,000 and $35,000. That's a $60,000 system out there. We'd like to repurpose that money and get this unit, a new one purchased, and they're out there. We've already researched that and get our system back in operation. But we'd also, whatever money we didn't use for that, we would like to hang on to and then reestablish that and put it in the budget for 14 to get get that system. But we didn't have any other money to use for that. It's really kind of important for squads and Twin Lakes and the constable and sort of Cleveland and the police department get the same information. That's the letter that we wanted to get approval just to repurpose those funds.
Yes, Sam.
Mr. Smith, can I ask you a question on this? How long has this tower been out of service or inoperable? Or
about 45 days.
So for 45 days now, anybody, any of our law enforcement officials on the West End haven't had a mobile data device out there?
They haven't had the signal opportunity. It took a while for reevaluation. We had to pull the system out. We had to send it away to have it evaluated and see if it was repairable. And then get both of them replaced.
I use one of these in the fire service on a daily basis. And I'm sure they do. More so than I do.
Absolutely.
But for 45 days just seems like a long, lengthy time, doesn't it, to you?
It is long. But, you know, there's a process of getting this done, then they have to get to get this repurposed, and there's only so many meetings to get there, and that's what we need to do.
This one, I would have pushed for a special meeting on this one for sure. That's just me. But
what's the process?
I'm still here.
I'm sorry.
Because I would have went to the chairman on that one and said, let's get a special meeting so we get this information out there. Because that's another tool for our law enforcement officials out there to have. And I appreciate that I'm going to vote for it, obviously, tonight and get it going. So thank you for being honest and candid with me. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry about that.
The question I ask is, what's the process? I mean, can we just do it?
The committee has the authority to approve of this, yes.
Motion to approve.
Without going to the board?
Second.
All right, further discussion or questions?
Oh, get it in.
All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, passes, thank you. And the next is...
How long will it take to do it, to take a while to get it done, or?
Well, now that we have the approval, we have the communications, they effectively have the paragons, and we will get the order and hopefully between now and early next week, and they do have them in stock, and then we get someone out here to replace it. The service company that services the sheriff's department for this is Milwaukee Two-Way, and they were just recently bought out by Baycom Communications. So they've had to change it, but that doesn't mean that we won't get it serviced correctly.
So it won't be too long, then?
No, and the unit itself had to be sent out of county and out of state where they could get service and looked at, and trying to evaluate whether it could have been repaired. So, yeah, there was downtime, management supervisor for Biggie's questions on it. And we didn't anticipate it taking that long for the notice board, but the squads do have communication technologies. They just didn't have the mobile data system, which they do need. That's why we're here to repurpose them.
All right, thank you. All right, the next item on the agenda is the Human Services Resolution Agent. Laverne?
Sure. We're requesting approval for a $37,509 grant to conduct crisis intervention training. We did this last year for law enforcement, both the law enforcement, sheriff's department, city, municipal police. And I don't know if you had a chance to see the letter to the editor from Jack Rose from NAMI. Today addresses the
well, just have to have a copy.
Yeah, yeah.
What have you got? More information.
And NAMI and Jim with our department and the police department, law enforcement, Gateway have all worked very hard at providing several crisis intervention training as well as the crisis intervention partnership training. We've completed a crisis intervention partnership training, and you can see that the numbers of participation and the evaluation. I think a model of community cooperation and certainly a word from law enforcement that it has affected the way that they intervene with individuals.
Yeah, this is our second round. The training exists for four reasons and outcomes that we need to report back to the Department of Justice that officers and law enforcement feel are better to respond to individuals with mental illness in crisis, that they can recognize the signs of psychiatric distress. They believe they require new skills to de-escalate crisis situations, and they might not have hope that they may be appropriate treatment for this. So we achieve those four goals by providing this week-long training. We've gotten participation, or will have participation for next September, the training for the teammates, the government officer, the sheriff, business then 6, the KPD 8, UW Parkside 2, Silver Lake 1, and Pleasant Prairie 2. One of the reasons we've been able to really attract a lot of law enforcement to this is because the grant allows us to pay those jurisdictions overtime or salaries, so the officers will be paid through the grant, and so those areas won't lose any officers on the road. So that's really the majority of where there's only those $28,423. So last time we reported these figures, we said we wanted to be 95% either agree or strongly agree, and we met all of our benchmarks and thus got another round of funding. But you're really correct. Jack Rosenami, Ray Merlin, Joe Whitman, Gateway Technical, John Rohde, and Kenosha Police Department, and myself fully have sort of gotten this down now because we do so many trainings. It's really well received.
All right, questions or discussion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. Jim, you know, the county board last meeting passed a resolution on treatment courts. Could you give us a report at the next meeting on that issue? It's not agenda tonight, so I couldn't ask you even if you were prepared to respond.
Actually, I am.
Well, I don't want to go beyond the agenda item. Corporation Council's here. And we want to be on a very fast behavior when he's here.
Reporter's here.
Yes, I did respond, and I said I would come.
It's the last Wednesday of this
month to report. The treatment courts. So we'll put you on our next agenda for a report on the treatment courts, and I think it's a good follow-up to the resolution that was passed at the last meeting of the county board.
Seems like the city,
I think emails came out today again.
Yeah. All right, very good. We'll move on then to the next item, Human Services Quarterly Report.
Thanks.
Who was going to do that? Is that you, Jim?
No.
Oh, no?
No.
I think it's in there for information.
Oh, okay, so there's no discussion.
Too, yeah.
All right, the update on grants, is that something that is going to be discussed?
No, both of those are, I think information was information.
Okay. All right.
If you have any questions, we can have Lori come back for the next meeting to go through it.
Do you want any discussion then, committee, on items 10 or 11, or request anybody to appear and respond?
I think it's self-explanatory.
Yeah, I read through it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the report we've been getting.
All right. Well, seeing none, then we'll move on then. We've done item 10 and 11. And then 12 is the Public Works waterproofing for the foundation. And all right, very good.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Martell. I'm the engineering project manager for the Public Works. We're bringing this forward you because we want to take advantage of a situation. We are looking at restoring the entire building just like we did on the courthouse in Molinaro for the admin building next year. So we're doing an engineering analysis of the building. In the basement, we have a real severe water leakage problem. And it turns out the city is going to be redoing 56th Street here and tearing up all the sidewalks, curb and gutter, including 10th Avenue here. Just to the driveway of the admin building. So that would save us probably 15 to 20% of the cost of having to tear up all the sidewalks and dig down into waterproof the exterior basement. If we don't stop the water from coming in, it's just going to get worse and worse. Eventually, it's going to get into the steel that's poured in the concrete. As that starts rusting, it'll expand and start busting the foundation apart. So, having said that, we're looking at doing next year because the city's already going to be taking out the sidewalks. That would save us a good amount of money. Therefore, we're proposing that at least on 10th Avenue side, the east and the south side, that we take advantage of that. And we had this money through our diligence that we're able to save that money through the courthouse restoration and a few other dollars from the general fund to cover the cost.
All right, discussion?
Yeah, I've got a question. Of that, then you have here listed $700,000, right? Now, is that going to include the west side and the north side of the building also? Is it going to be for that particular dollars?
And the estimate is probably between $600,000 and $700,000, but the east side and the south side go straight down the face of the building. It's fairly simple. The north side and the west side actually has a vault that extends out about 10 feet beyond the end of the building.
I see.
And then goes down. So that sort of like the top of the vault of the roof is underneath the sidewalk, kind of at the same level as the sidewalk, but extends out. Waterproofing all of that and then going down is a much bigger scope. It's much more...
Yeah, I was just trying to conceptualize when I seen the 146, and then I got the...
No, you're absolutely right. The dollar amounts are vastly different. But the 146, it's because of the complicated and the extra materials and the extra work to do because of the vaults in the north and the west side. Plus, this 146 takes advantage that the city is already taking out the sidewalk.
Absolutely.
and the other. So we having seen this, we were talking to say you really want to take advantage of it.
Thank you for that.
All right, further discussion.
Mr. Phillip, so on the vault situation, we've got it on the west and the north side. Do you wind up waterproofing the exterior of the vaults as well?
Correct. Yeah, it starts with the base of the building. It goes over the top of the vault and then down. All is a continuous membrane that will be fused together.
So really, there'll be nothing for the interface between the vault and the building. It'll just be for the exterior of the vault. Is that how it works?
It's going to tie into the building, so
right.
If any water does come down the edge of the building, it'll go above the waterproofing, above the vault, and
right.
Down. And also, we're putting in a drain tile, and we'll have a system to drain that water away from the foundation. So not only will it be waterproofing it, but we're going to put a system in place where the water does not.
It has a place to go.
Has a place to go, so it doesn't sit against the foundation.
So basically, it's going to extend down the side of the building, hit the vault, and then the membrane will go from there
all the way down to the foundation.
Now, there's still other improvements on this building restoration project involving roofing and so forth.
Correct. This is just as we identify everything, looking at this from the roof all the way down the sides, and when we bring you we actually found some pieces of stone. As they were doing their, they go around and test every piece of stone.
Mine's in there.
See how sound
is this the same?
The same inside architects, the same procedures, everything we did for the courthouse. They actually found some pieces that were just about nearly to fall off. My one was about 20 feet above the employee entrance here. And it was it was over 10 pounds. So everything's secure right now.
So I realize that this is simply addressing the east side and the south side here. When we take a look at the bigger scope of this building ballpark, you know, can you give us an estimate over taking a look at just the entire precipice and the cost of this building? I realize we're a bit off topic, but I just want to have an idea what this is going to be involving.
Yes, preliminarily we're looking at taking out the south and east side. We're looking at,
so we're accidentally coordinating this.
2.35
for this building in its entirety.
For the maintenance.
And your proposal would be over one budgetary year, numerous budgetary years to have a plan.
They'd split. I don't think it's been completely determined for the courthouse. They were able to split it over two budgetary years. Since you were the chairman, I think they would like to, or looking into that option for this also. Okay. I can't.
That's fine. I just wanted a thumbnail sketch. That's my question, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Ron.
So we accidentally found out that this was going on, or did we communicate this sidewalk thing going on? We're saving money because the city's stirring up something?
We've been in contact, especially the highway department with the city, and actually, let me back up. As part of some executives, they had the lawsuit with the health department. These guys are probably a little more familiar than I am even about it. As part of the resolution was to get brand new sidewalks in front of the courthouse, and the county exec was able to negotiate it out with the admin building here. So they were aware of that because they knew that the street was going to be done, and they wanted me to talk to them about it. And that's when I realized we were doing the engineering of this building, that we had this waterproofing problem we needed to excavate down anyway. So that's when I came forward. Let's try to do this now, and if we can get the money and save the time. Plus, of course, if they were putting brand new sidewalks and then next year tear them all up, people would go, oh, another government, right hand is fucking left.
We'd be there saying it too, wouldn't we?
Yeah. So we wanted to again say with what the county executive worked out and the timing
and that's why we're requesting.
Good job. Thank you.
All right, is there a motion here?
I'm going to make a motion to approve this.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Bill, second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. All right, the next item is the golf air conditioners. Who's doing that? Jim? Okay.
Thanks, Frank.
Good evening.
Oh, that's a new one.
I'm here to talk about the resolution for the approve the transfer of funds to replace two air conditioning units at Brightondale Golf Course. There are two air conditioning units at the Brightondale Golf Course. There are two furnaces at the Brightondale Golf Course. This committee approved replacing one of the furnaces a few months ago. And I believe at that time somebody said, well, why don't you replace two? Because one, the other one might go bad.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, well, the other one really hasn't gone bad, but the two air conditioners, last year we had to have them, and I'm not real technical, had to have them juiced up. So this year it was the same problem. So we had somebody come in and say, what's really wrong with them? And they said, well, you should really replace them, their original equipment when the clubhouse was remodeled back in 1993. So we have an estimate to replace the two air conditioning units and also the cooling coil in the old furnace. So that furnace will be able to stay good and be used for air conditioning through the summer. And we really don't know how long that lasts, but rather than replace the whole thing, we can just fix that and get the two new air conditioning units. The estimate is $69,000. We have funds available from paving projects that they've been doing out there, either parking lots or cart paths, so we won't have to borrow any additional funds nor use any levy dollars. So we're asking that you approve the transfer of funds from the land improvements budget to the building improvements budget.
All right, discussion?
Question?
Yes.
Specifically, what will be deferred in the paving program, you know?
We have $50,000 in this year's budget to repave the, at Brightondale, the shop yard where the maintenance. That was so bad that as they would take the equipment out of the shop, the mowers and things would hit the ground. So the highway department found a way to do that and not spend $50,000. Their estimate is around $27,000 or $28,000. So we'll have a little bit left over there. And then there was $47,000 left over in the cart paths. We were going to do some on the blue course this year, but white is done, red is, we're not doing really any capital improvements to the red. So they were going to take those funds and use them to repave some of the cart paths on blue course. So we'll take those funds, $69,000, repurpose them, use them for the air conditioning.
So long story short, no paving of blue cart paths this year.
Correct.
Okay. That's my question. Thank you.
I've got a question.
And
I know I asked this before, and I ask it again. Okay. So you'll be really prepared for this. We're doing two new air conditioners, one new furnace, and repurposing the old furnace with a new coil in it,
yes.
Leaving the old furnace there. Okay, I followed you. I listened to what you had to say. $69,000 estimate. Now, how much more would it have been to replace that furnace that's going to be a dog out there right now for us? That furnace that we're just putting the coil into it, but not the furnace.
That whole furnace would cost about, we did the other one for about $15,000, a little less than $15,000.
So $15,000.
Yeah.
That's all I have. Thank you for that.
All right, further discussion? All right, there's a motion to approve.
I'll second that motion.
Further discussion? Yes, Al?
I just want to point out that we're approving this subject to the approval of the Highway and Parks and Facilities Committee that's going to meet Tuesday before the county board, so we can bring it right to the board.
Yeah,
so otherwise, we have to wait till June to do it, and we wouldn't get the air conditioners until July.
I'm sure you got them on board already, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I just want to make you guys aware that you're approving it prior to that.
Yeah.
All right, further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, it passes, and we'll circulate the resolution.
Thank you.
The next item is personnel. Bob, you want to talk about this notice on contract termination?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have all been here before. And what happens now under the Act 10 is that once existing contracts, original expiration date is met as contract ends, and the new contract is subject to the wage-only provision of Wisconsin Act 10. The second move that we make on a regular basis is a contractual termination. It is best described as a safety net, just in case the law changes or just in case something is being rendered illegal or unconstitutional, that we have taken the action necessary to then renegotiate a new contract should that happen. And there is a section in every one of our contracts in the 1090 labor agreement, it's section 1401, and it requires the parties to notify each other before the First County Board meeting in July that there is an intention to terminate the contract. And so that's what I'm asking permission to do tonight and from the board so that we can notify local 1090, which is the parks and golf employees, what are left of them. I think there are three left in that unit, that we will not be renewing their contract as written, and that should they recertify as a unit, we will negotiate a wage-only contract with them after the first of the year.
Mm. All right. Discussion on that?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion on it? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.
I did.
He motioned it and he seconded it. The DAC.
All right, very good. Then we'll move on to the next item, the resolution to approve the placement of employment position entitled Mental Health Dismantling Racism Coordinator. Was that
I told here? This is confusing.
Who came up with the name?
It was the health department.
I see.
And they speak their own language, but I'm sure they've all come along. But it's funds that you have already accepted. And a 50%, and what this in short is going to do is establish a new employment position. And that new employment position will have two primary functions and two primary funding sources. The first funding source is a Wisconsin partnership program and grant, which allows funds to dismantle racism between health care providers and the African American community. And it has somewhat of a focus on mental health. And so the individual hired to do this will have to have mental health talent and certification in addition to being an RN and a few other requirements. Parenthetical to that, or parallel to that, is the fact that the Nurse Home Visiting Partnership Program offers a mental health option to women who are being counseled by our nursing staff. And this would provide that special service locally through the health department. And so the funds then come from the Nurse Family Partnership Program and from the Wisconsin Partnership Program to create this more or less hybrid position. The roles and requirements are attached. And as always, you will find the therefore resolved that if either of the two funding sources should discontinue the position, then will be eliminated.
Okay.
With that, I'll do my best to answer questions.
Yeah.
What about the other ethnic groups out there? Does this entitle all those, or because I just see health-related disparities in the African-American community. I don't see anything with the other community, or how should I put it, the other ethnic races out there.
The grant money is purposed for the
African-American. Just that only.
And
Okay, I'm just, yeah, I understand.
Grant pays for that, and that's...
That's it.
We're taking the cash, and so we're going to do that. I hope that there would be funds for other communities who have a difficult time establishing meaningful relationships with the healthcare provider. The health department is uniquely fashioned to create those.
Right, and I appreciate your candid answer.
Thank you.
Is that based on some sickness that the African American community is more susceptible to or something, or?
Our focus is more on cultural or societal barriers, breaking down those barriers in order to establish it.
Can you give us some examples of what this person might be doing or what problem he's responding to?
I really can't.
It's,
Hopefully it's been described in the document.
Well, it's pretty broad language, and
this is...
Would have been of interest to know the kinds of things a person will be doing.
You'd like to ask me that on the board floor?
Yeah, maybe you could do that.
Yeah, I think we should have... I'm not expressing any opposition to this, but
maybe
this
Gwen
sounds
or something.
Like a rather important position with a quite a defined mission, which is a new mission,
right,
responding to some problems we ought to really be talking about in detail here and have a little better working knowledge other than responding and dismantling racism and, you know, said.
Told you.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll do.
Dismantling sounds like
a... prepare a more comprehensive explanation in particular of what that job is.
Why doesn't somebody from humans...
Or I will have Cindy or Gwen speak on it.
I think so. I think it was good for us and good for the general public.
That's right.
To have the problem defined with more specificity, and the kinds of things this person will be doing. When you're talking about dismantling, it sounds like a mechanical enterprise, but
it's an odd name for it.
Yeah, but the other position that was filled, and I don't know if the two are related, had to do with the infant mortality rates. I don't know if this is an offshoot of that or...
It's a convenient link, I think.
Yeah,
that's
what I think,
they've
too.
They've had trouble reaching the mental health providers in Kenosha and getting them dedicated themselves to the First Family Home Visitor Program. And so because this has a mental health element to it, and a mental health qualification for the individual who takes it, that she or he would then be available to serve both.
Yeah, maybe if Gwen and Cindy could be there or speak to that with some degree of specificity.
Bring along.
We'd like to know specifically what the problem is and what the solution is going to be.
They'll be happy.
All right, good. Anything further on this?
No, thank you for that as well.
Do I need a motion?
Yep.
I'll make a motion.
Supervisor ordained the motion and a second by
I'll second it based on the fact that you were going to get more information at the meeting.
All right, anything else? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, then moving on to item 16, the proposed purchase of 3308 Washington Road. Bernie?
Closed.
You got to go into closed session.
Well, I that was on the agenda. It's not required. And what are your thoughts on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, our committee. Mr. Cardamore and I are able to discuss this in open, if it's the pleasure of the committee. If you want to speak more freely, because it's a matter of purchase and competitive process, we are able to go into closed session, but I'll leave it up to the committee without a strong recommendation either way.
All right. Well, I think, from my perspective, I don't think we should go into closed session on public business except in very exceptional circumstances. If you recommend it for some specific reason, do so, but it's up to you. I think it ought to be open.
I agree.
But it's up to the committee.
But we can handle
that's
it.
My that's my deal.
I have a question.
Yes.
Well, usually when you go into closed session to discuss purchases or property, you're talking amounts it appears that those amounts have been set already.
Yes.
So that discussion, and I agree with you, then there's no reason, because usually that's why you do it, you know.
I agree too, Terry, because the groundwork's already been pretty much done.
Yeah.
So this is just a
confirmation. If there was real strong competitive reasons, I definitely would mention.
Yeah.
We put this on, and there was a little more discussion at Public Works, but I think this would be fine.
I think this is more a question of do you want to do it or not, rather than the details of the proposal.
I think I would agree.
Yeah.
Okay. And in these two purchases, I'll be discussing the one right next door with the Murray Higgins Frost property law office.
Okay, we can do both.
And Mr. Carbone will be talking about the Brookside one.
All right, so you want to do 17?
He can go first.
Oh, okay. All right, Joe.
The harder one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Briefly, this is a piece of property adjacent to the Brookside Care Center. As I mentioned at the Public Works committee meeting last week, I find it interesting that without any grand plan or design, we have the opportunity over the course of about 2 months to pick up three pieces of property that we've had our eye on to one degree or another for quite some time. We expect to close tomorrow, barring any unforeseen circumstances, on a piece that the committee approved purchase of, I think, last month out in the county as part of a highway project that we've been looking at off and on for a number of years. There's this piece of property where this is at least the third, I think, potential go-round of discussions with this piece of property. And then the one that Bernie will be discussing, I know, has also been approached at least a couple of times previously. So good time for real estate. As I indicated, this is adjacent to Brookside. And the primary reason for looking at purchasing it at this time is for future potential expansion at Brookside. There's no specific plan on the books right now, but it is at a piece of property that is certainly going to be useful in the future. Does the committee have the map in as part of its materials?
Plan.
Okay. As you can see from that, as well as probably from the plat, they're really just three pieces of property in between our nursing home facility and the private nursing home facility directly east of it.
I already had it there.
And we were approached by the owner of this property. She has, over the course of the past year, lost in fairly rapid succession, first her husband and then one of her sons. And so she did approach us to see whether we still had any continuing interest in acquiring this piece of property, and we entered into negotiations on that basis. It was mentioned at the Public Works Committee meeting last week by Supervisor Noble that he thought that some 8 or 9 years ago there had been conversations about this purchase. And at that time, the asking price was somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000. This is obviously considerably less than that. I think it's an appropriate and fair price based on the assessments over the past couple of years. It's a little higher than the current assessment, but it's right on tap with where it was a year or two ago and less than where it was
right here?
Just before that. I think it's a good opportunity. I think it's a piece of property that is going to be useful to us in the future, and I think that this is the right time for us to find one.
All right, discussion. Bill?
The adjacent properties, does this property owner have title to them as well, or are they separate?
They are separate.
Anything else?
Yes. It was discussed at the Brookside Board of Trustees, and they all signed on it.
Where's the land here?
So we all signed on, I should say.
I'm sorry, and I should have mentioned, and it is in the paperwork, this is essentially a budget-neutral or revenue-neutral
right
proposition. The monies for this are monies that are carried over in the Brookside budget. No additional borrowing bonding would be necessary to achieve this.
Okay. How is it in the budget?
Well, more than that, isn't it?
I mean, it's not a fucking, we have a budget modification. We're using, last month we came in with the closeout, okay? All the figures are unaudited, and I want to address all three issues when it comes to the one that Jim presented earlier, which was the, not Jim presented, but Frank presented on the waterproof. The two property purchases are being done with funds, surplus funds from that building. Surplus, Brookside surplus is being used to fund the Brookside building. And the Washington, well, that's a Washington Road. And the building next door is being funded with a combination of capital surplus and
can you make it out?
Some other surpluses, but the reality surplus from
what is that, 20 feet?
Another capital project, and I'll get into that later.
60 feet,
but the fact of the matter is, all three of these are being done with funds that were in that closeout. All three of these are unaudited.
Can you give Al our attention, please?
Unaudited at this particular time, and we have language in the budget modification that if the audit changes those figures, we would be able to move money from other capital projects. But all three of those are being done with unaudited figures. I think you guys are aware in the closeout, we don't see any substantial change in the audit, but if something occurred where we had a shortfall, we have a mechanism in here that we would take it from other capital projects at this particular point, or the highway capital project fund.
So this requires
and Brookside's we're taking $215,000 out of the Brookside surplus, where they had a surplus that they weren't able to keep.
No.
Assuming that we close on this property, what is the intention of the disposal of this in terms of it's a domicile, correct?
Correct.
And once you take title of property, I would assume that the person who's living there be vacating?
Yes, although as part of the agreement that we were making to purchase, or the offer to purchase, we did extend the courtesy of allowing the homeowner the ability to remain in the home for 1 year in order to facilitate her process of moving out, sorting through God knows how many years of having lived there.
She's good.
And again, there aren't immediate plans for the property. It's more looking toward the future.
Understood. In terms of that person remaining, what type of landlord-tenant relationship would there be?
She would be remaining in the home. We are not charging any type of rent. We will be maintaining insurance on the property. She would be maintaining insurance on her personal property within the domicile.
Hold harmless agreements, protecting us against any particular maladies that might occur at that.
I believe that's covered by the offer purchase, yes.
So she would live there free for a year?
Correct.
Up to a year.
Up to a year.
And then after that, would the intent be to have the structure remain or to raise it, or what's the plan?
Again, I can't speak to what Brookside's intent would be, in part because I don't know that there is any concrete plan. My guess would be that they would be taking that structure down. I don't believe that they would be using it as is.
Do you have a comment, Mr. Bach?
Real preliminary discussion has been made to possibly selling the house and having the buyer pick it up and move it somewhere, which is not going to be true for the house next door, but that house is much more sound over at Brookside and could possibly be sold.
So, in any event, it's undetermined what's going through the purchase and how eventually it is disposed of, or what's happened is indefinite at this point.
Correct.
That's my question.
Thank you, John.
Just to kind of expand on that, I think the trustees, we talked about it a little bit, about the, if you look at that map picture here that we have, first thing they could do is just add some parking. And that could go on for a long time.
Sure.
Because the parking in the front there for visitors is sorely lacking. I go there for my meetings at 3 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, and there's nowhere to park. You got to park down around the back or somewhere else. So that probably would be the first thing that we'd look at. And we might be able to do that internally too, just creating a parking lot. That won't happen for, you know, who knows, not for another year.
Yes, sir.
Can you clarify on the map? Do we don't own the properties in the middle? Just trying to clarify that.
Correct.
So there's three in between,
right? There's three in between. We are, at this point, trying to acquire the one immediately to the east.
Further discussion? Seeing none, is there a motion?
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, it passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Bernie on the 56.
Which one?
No, I got it.
You got everything? Oh, jeez. He's got a dog.
Yeah, pony show. Bear with me just a little bit. I'm not
this one?
No, the one I'm signing right there.
Oh, this one?
I know you walked past this. You probably saw it as you came in again tonight. This is our administration building that we're sitting in right now. This is Mary Higgins Frost Law Office, and this is the county-owned unemployment building just the other side. Alongside here is the driveway and the parking lot that the county owns. This is the part we're talking about fine.
It's a nice photo.
Thanks.
Oh. Did you get the helicopter up there?
Somebody did, yeah. You heard that they're going to do over $2 million worth of restoration work on this building, and acquiring the building next door will save us $15,000 or more just on letting the contractor have room to work. But in addition to that, this purchase of the building will save us from work this year where we tear up the driveway for the law office and we won't have to restore it. Okay, so we're going to save $15,000 for that this year. And then next year, whenever it gets to the next phase where he has to go on the west side and north side, as you heard, he has to go further in, which would wipe out the whole driveway instead of just 5 feet like this year, which is going to go on this side. And we'd have to replace the driveway again. If there was somebody living in there and using it, we'd have to give them alternate access and probably parking and make, and we would might be delayed in what we were trying to do. But she, Maria Higgins Frost, is retiring, and she, it's no big secret, she's making the necessary steps to do that. And so she, I had approached her sometime before this and planted the seed that if she did sometime in the future decide to sell this property, would she please contact the county? We don't have any specific projects or purpose. But you can see it's surrounded by county property, and it would be a wonderful acquisition. So this just coincidentally happened at the same time the neighbor of Brookside contacted us, offering their property for sale, which we've tried to buy a couple of times in the past also. So with that, thank you. The additional savings that I came across related to the restoration of this building is that Frank Martinelli's consultant estimates $10,000 savings for having the space to work around the building as opposed to tiptoeing around an existing law office when he's trying to do the restoration of the outside of the KCAP building. And another $15,000 savings for when he would destroy the driveway the next time, plus we'd have to perhaps pay for some interruption of business and things like that. Getting down to the details of this purchase, I added in an estimate for demolition because the building was made in 1883. We're not going to use it. And it would be best to use that space in the meantime before we have any other purpose for it as a convenience for the contractor when he's working on this to store materials and to equipment and scaffolding and such like that, and also possibly for parking, with minimal capital outlay, until some successor boards decide that, you know, they want to do something else with that property. There's a couple of problems to deal with. The restoration project, in your materials that I passed out, there's a survey that shows the location of this building here. This building here is a concrete block garage. It is less than 2 feet from the wall of this building, the KCAB building. The KCAB building along here is less than 1 foot away from the lot line. So it's really hard to work on this property as is. And we're doing massive restoration. It's very difficult. It's going to add more to the expense of doing the restoration. Plus, this building here that we're buying was built in 1883. So if we tear up the driveway and do all the other things we're going to be doing, there's a potential that we could harm this building if it was, you know, if we weren't buying it. So there's some good reason to buy it. The purchase price at $160 is a tad over this year's assessed value of $140, but as I mentioned with these figures, we're saving much more than that. And in the future, we might not have this opportunity again if we were to exercise eminent domain. So for some successor law office or anybody else, we'd have to pay relocation costs and all that stuff. So this is a golden opportunity, and I would urge that you would support.
I'll make the motion to approve it.
All right, there's a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Discussion.
And a question.
Who was seconded? Here was it. Aaron, okay. Bill, discussion.
Is the intention to raise the building once it's purchased?
Yes, as soon as we get occupancy, which is the end of June.
Take the other one away.
So we could conceivably have it raised within a 2 week period? 3 week period?
I know that as soon as I get permission, I was going to wait until this committee gave the green light, but I'm going to contact the owner, see if we can get an inspection of for demolition purposes, and then we can maybe get a tighter spec and maybe better price on demolition. Depends how much asbestos might be. That's what we're looking for.
That's my question. Thank you.
All right. Then anything else?
Just was going to say, Ron, you kept going. You were saving so much money. I thought we were going to get it for nothing there for a while.
Well, I actually started this without knowing that the KCAP restoration project was going on. It was just a good opportunity without this project, with it.
Just make it a joke.
Makes sense.
Good job.
All right, further discussion.
Good job, Bernie. You
can take the unemployment business with it, too.
You have a comment on that? Or?
No. Take the unemployment down, too, while you're at it.
Oh, yeah. That's up to you, but probably a good idea.
All right. Any other discussion?
You got the equipment there and start going.
Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you. And that takes us down to, I don't know that the bills are being audited at this moment, are they? Are you going to do that? Okay.
You sign that one and we'll send
all
this
right,
one around.
All right, very good. And then we have some reports as our next item of on the agenda. You're going to do that after?
Yeah, if you can start that so I can try to keep track and make sure we get that.
Peace. Okay. We won't let you down. Everything has to be done in order here. For Tuesday night.
There's a report in your packet that looks like this.
Oh, what did I just do with it?
This is a report on discussion of jailer overtime. And this report basically tells you that there was a request from Supervisor Molinaro on the amount of hours that are scheduled for the month of May for jailers overtime, which were very substantial. And he wanted to know if it was ongoing or it was something that exists in a bubble. But we looked at the same periods for the last 3 years, and if you look at the bottom line of this report, the overtime hours per employee per week was 5 hours per week in 11, 4 hours in 12, and 5 hours again in 13 through this period. Now, we did talk, Bob and I did talk to the Sheriff's Department. We know that they have scheduled substantial hours of overtime for the month of May, and I'm going to turn this over to Bob at this particular point because he can tell you why that has occurred and what we're doing about it.
There are three primary reasons why we are going to have significant overtime in the month of May. The first was an anticipated problem. Our hiring list was expiring toward the end of January, and so we conducted a general search for candidates and gave the test on April 6th. We had 300 folks show up for us, which is really remarkably good. And we have already fired off 20 of them for background. And so we are beginning the process to fill what we now, as of this morning, have as 7 vacancies. So there are 7 vacancies, 7 budgeted vacancies that are currently part of their operation. But compounding that problem is a significant hit in workers' comp and AMS. We have 10 folks who are out on AMS or workers' comp, and we anticipate that most of those will be back before the end of the month or very early in June. There are 2 or 3 prolonged leaves that will have to be compensated for. But as Al pointed out, the average is 5 hours per employee per month, per week. And this is really the cause of the problem. So we have 9 vacancies. Last year, 7 vacancies. I'm sorry, there's 9. And we are taking action to fill them. So I would suggest that those vacancies will be filled in early to mid-June. However, the training period is 8 to 12 weeks. And so relief is coming. It's not coming fast.
Right.
It's coming as fast as we can do it.
Are those, how many do you have on sick leave now? You said you had several people on.
Between ANS and workers' comp, is about 10.
Yeah, and the workers. What are our ANS benefits? Are they like they were, or are they less than they used to be?
We have a 3-day waiting period, then we have 30 days of full pay, and then we have the balance of the year at 2/3 pay.
Okay.
Now there are those who have recovered and are working their way back in. So we have some limited duty assignments, which people kind of work hard on themselves back into the job. And obviously, I can't share what the diagnoses are or anything like that.
Well, I'm not asking that.
Based on what we know, we would say about 3 of them are still more than 1 for 1. More than 1.
Yeah, Bob, you said about 10 are out on ANS or working staff right. Or whatever. No. You've probably tracked this for a number of years, right? Is it about average 10 per year like that, or?
3 is a little high for workers' comp, to be honest. But it's not uncommon for us to have 5 to 10 folks off.
So we're in
just kind of general.
Yeah. General. Okay. Thank you for that.
Bill?
It's in my experience that these positions have had fair amounts of turnover in the past, had people in and out a lot. Had substantial amounts of overtime that a reasonable entity might say, could we do this better? Could we do this differently so we don't have this overtime? And when you look at other industries, you look at the airline industry, for example, which is a completely different business, but they'll routinely say, okay, we're going to overbook by 4%. We know that there's going to be a certain attrition. I mean, are we adopting a type of a policy here at the county where we can say, let's hire some additional folks because you know we're going to have some washouts. I mean, are we proactive or what are we doing?
2 years ago, the board gave us permission to overhire these jobs. I will say just a couple of random responses to what you said. First is we're always trying to keep up. Folks who think they can do this job need to experience it, and we lose some percentage of our people very early in their time. Because no matter how many times we tell them, we actually tour them before they they are offered a job. No matter how many times you tell them they're going to be locked in a room for 8 hours and 65 people. And they don't have any problem with that until they've actually experienced it. It can be somewhat of an eye-opening experience. So we're used to losing a few right off the bat. But this is an unusual number of vacancies. And it's a combination of coming to the end of the hiring list. And routinely, the end of the hiring list does not produce the same quality person at the top of the hiring list does, because they are ranked by various assessments, not just a written test, but the multiple interview assessment, a few other things that we throw in there, which measures the possibility of success, and clearly the people at the top of the list have a higher possibility of being successful. So 9 is a lot. It's an unusual number for us to have vacancies. We do have the ability to overhire. The board gave us that a few years ago. And we will get back up to speed very shortly. The Sheriff's Department is committed to doing the backgrounds quickly, and dedicated to protecting staff to finishing them. So we will have candidates coming back to us by next week, and then we'll schedule interviews and get going.
So conceivably, this latest batch of people could be eligible for hiring by what date?
June 15th. They have training unless they're already certified. I also approved today, as a record, the possibility to, or we're going to look at inviting retirees to come back and fill some roles part-time in the summer. So we have certified retirees who may be looking for work in the summer. And that would be a logical, quick fix, short-term for that. Maybe somebody wants to pick up a couple of days a week. Maybe more than one somebody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. Then we can fill some holes that way. And that would be actually less expensive.
Well, it's not the type of report we like to see, but I thank you for your candor and your proactivity.
It's not what I like to see either.
That's my comment.
And?
Yeah, thank you. I like the idea of backfill to retirees, I think, to help us during that training period. These new hires. Now, training dollar is on us, or is that on them?
That's on us. We train.
And the training takes approximately?
It seems to be, I'm going out of memory here, but it's 8 to 12 weeks, something like that. They go to, we fill Gateway when our office is there. The other next closest facility that they go to is Fox Valley, Oshkosh, some more there. The third option is Blackhawk, which is out in Janesville.
So, in your best guess, in order to train one individual, what would you say it cost the county to train one individual to be ready to go, and then, boom, here we go?
I can get that number for you. I'd be happy to get it to you tomorrow.
Well, whenever, in your convenience, you don't have to rush into it. Because what I'm trying to figure out is what that dollar amount is, and if we could work out something with a potential new hire to say, you know, we'll pay for half of your training to stay on the list, so then once a job opportunity comes up and you something there in order to get that vacancy filled up faster. Because, like I said, right now it's unusually large at 9, and you're talking 6 to 8 weeks to train somebody to be ready to go, depending on their level of training.
We occasionally get applications from other jurisdictions, and they're already certified. We've hired our employees before from Seaton County. And so it's part of doing the job is to pick the right people, put them in place. The retiree idea came up today and sounded like a really good idea to me. Contact some folks.
Here's something else. Now, it works with us in my line of work, which is different. But if someone's already a paramedic and they take the test, they're up here on that list. So if someone's already trained on their own dime, they would be here too. I'm just wondering if that's something that to convey out there in a job description or something. I'm sure you probably addressed that being a director, but I'm just trying to figure out how we can lessen that gap of 6 to 8 weeks, lessen the financial burden on the county, that 6 to 8 weeks of training somebody, and then all of a sudden they take on the job and, oh, I don't like this job. That 6 to 8 weeks is gone. See you later.
The tour was a big addition a few years ago. Now, we were hiring folks out.
Mm-hmm.
The tour's been helpful on that.
Makes the tour rougher.
Well, I mean, they get to see the... most of you have probably been in there.
I've been in there. Well,
only on the outside of the bunch.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I was visiting you while you're in.
I just want to clarify that.
No way I'm going to.
Through the window. Through the window a couple of times.
You just told me they watch it in there for
there's
an hour.
There's a few sections of that tour that are uncomfortable also.
When you do the tour, how long is it? How long are they in there?
About an hour.
Yeah.
Long enough to know they don't want
to
be in there.
Long enough to know that
you should tour them for 24.
Well, it's the dormitories that are most intimidating, in my view.
Yeah.
Because they really lock the door, and you're in there, and it's you and 65 guys.
Do you have a female? Male? I mean, there's female correctional.
Females can watch males, but males cannot watch females.
Okay.
And so, in any women dorm, there are only women DSOs.
And you have enough of them,
Yeah, we had our ratios.
I went through that jail. It was built. That's the last time I been in there. It was empty. I went through it. That's the last time I've been in there.
I'd rather work out there than here. This is a real jail.
Very good choice of words there.
Oh, well.
You got to try that.
I have to give it to you with Supervisor
Malone. All right, very good.
I just want to reiterate that there were two questions asked. Was this normal, and how did it compare? And that's why you have the report that shows through 423, we were pretty much on par. We realize and we agree with the comments that Supervisor Molinaro made, that it did pop up substantially, and it was scheduled for an unusual amount of overtime in the month of May. And Bob's explanation is, you know, we know our problem, we'll get through it, and it should go back to a level basis with the employees. So that concludes. I think that's all I have for reports. All right. my agenda.
That's it.
All right. Is there anything else to come before the committee this evening?
There's a motion to adjourn.
All right. There's a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Donald.
All right. Very good. Donald. All in favor say aye. Opposed. We are adjourned. And
second.
I made the motion.
I'm Wisconsin.
You don't want to adjourn.
Yeah.
All right.
Not bad.
Yes.
Not bad.
Can't get a lot.